crazy. You take all my guys who are on this Cavs roster, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, down the line, all of those guys have signed contracts thinking, I want to be with LeBron. But Kyrie is still on that contract that he signed thinking that he was going to be the leader, the franchise player.
I want to play you, it's a little bit long, it's like a little over a minute long. Brian Windhorst, I believe this is from this morning on Mike and Mike, right, dudes? Yep, Charlie pulled this from this morning around 8:30 on Mike and Mike. Brian Windhorst talking specifically about Kyrie Irving and the Wolves from both sides. So, and Andrew Wiggins, if you want Kyrie Irving, and for anyone who's just joining and maybe you were out at the cabin all weekend, on Friday afternoon, when people were leaving work and after we had gone off the air, news leaked that Kyrie Irving is demanding a trade from Cleveland. He doesn't want to play with LeBron anymore. And that's a whole, that's the national discussion. Yes. Like, how is that possible?
Yep.
But the local discussion is the Wolves were one of the four teams on his list that he would want to play for.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Brian Windhorst, ESPN Insider, talking about the Wolves' connection here.
I think Jimmy Butler is a more valuable player than Kyrie Irving because, again, he plays the wing position, which is more desired, and he plays at both ends of the court. I got to tell you, you know, I respect Kyrie Irving's incredible offensive talent, and he's especially valuable in playoff settings because he can create his own shot in those vital moments. But he is a swinging gate defensively. He is a horrible defensive player. And if he's going to want to be the centerpiece of a franchise, he's going to get that light shined on him a little bit. But if you're evaluating him versus Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler is probably the more valuable piece. And if you weren't willing to give up Andrew Wiggins to get Butler and you were still able to get him, I don't know why you'd make him available for Kyrie. That said, getting the thought of having Kyrie Irving, who says he wants to be in Minnesota, and let's not just move past that like it's nothing. Some player, a star player in the NBA, says he wants to be in Minnesota. This is headline stuff material in the Twin Cities. But the concept of Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, and Karl Towns with some good supporting players, that team all of a sudden looks like it's a top four team in the Western Conference, and we're talking about a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 13 years. That situation may make the Tom Thibodeau stutter a little bit and say, wait a minute, maybe we should look at this. But I know that their owner, Glenn Taylor, has not wanted to trade Andrew Wiggins in the past.
Not that that should matter at all, by the way. I don't care what Glenn Taylor thinks about personnel.
Okay, but let's delve into the fact that Butler and Tibbs are really tight. Butler, therefore, is going to not be the ordinary player here. He's gonna have some sway here. Butler at the All-Star game, when asked if you could pick one player from this league who would be your teammate, said Kyrie. There's too much of this that at least makes sense to dismiss it. And I'm telling you, I think the real reason why Kyrie wants out of Cleveland is he sees what's coming, and he knows that if he stays there, he's going to be left on an island alone, and no one's going to want to go there, and LeBron's going to be gone. So I'm not buying that Kyrie couldn't come here and be happy. I don't think it's that Kyrie hates LeBron as much as he hates the fact that he knows when LeBron leaves, and it's going to be when LeBron leaves and goes probably to L.A., that if Kyrie's stuck there, he's absolutely bleeped until he can leave them.
So I'll fully admit, we've been on the air for 2+ hours, and I've been thinking about this all weekend, and I'm super on the fence about this still. I'm super on the fence. So I just want to talk this through. I want you to be my basketball trade conspiracy therapist here.
Sounding board. I can be a sounding board for
be
you.
Be my because you're much more like you would do the trade.
Yes.
And I could talk myself into either path. And I'm like Corzo just emailed. Corzo and I always go back and forth about basketball. We both agree that Wiggins is underachieving to this point. And Corzo emailed a million reasons why he would make the trade in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
In a vacuum, if you're just stripping away everything else, and I get Karl-Anthony Towns, 22, Jimmy Butler, 27, going to be 28 in his prime, and Kyrie Irving, 25. I get three of the top 15 to 20 players in the league. I think Jimmy Butler is like the 12th best player. I think Kat is in that mix. And I think Kyrie is the third best among the overall game, including defense. I think Kyrie is the third best among those three, but he is still like the 15th or 17th best player in the league. And you can debate once you get in that range. In a vacuum, yes. The reason I hesitate, there's two of them. One is roster construction right now, which maybe shouldn't be something to sweat because you can just figure it out when you can trade Jeff Teague or figure out a way to make it work with Jeff Teague. It'd be an undersized backcourt because your shooting guard would then be 6'3" and doesn't play defense in Kyrie Irving. So that would be a question mark. But offensively, good luck trying to stop that collection of five with Kyrie Irving replacing as a much more efficient scorer, replacing Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
But you don't really have any depth at wing. You don't have any salary cap flexibility once you pull that trade, because it's not like you're gaining salary cap flexibility, and you'd have two point guards starting on, in your starting five.
Yes.
So it would just be clunky until you can trade Jeff Teague.
Yep.
That's one hesitation, and maybe I'm overrating that. Maybe that's just something you'd have to deal with. And the other one is Andrew Wiggins, I just think has a higher ceiling than Kyrie Irving, in that we're kind of seeing who Kyrie Irving is now. He's been in the league for 6 years, and he's really good. I don't think he's top five player in the league good necessarily. Offensively, he's up there, but defensively, Wiggins has potential to be a top 5 or 10 player, but he's nowhere near that right now.
Sure he does.
So I'm thinking about the ceiling in 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
But here's the thing. If he reaches that ceiling, you could probably just go get him anyways in 3 or 4 years when he's a free agent again. So I might be overvaluing both reasons to not want to make this trade.
And don't forget how you felt throughout last year as well towards him. Don't forget that, because I do not want to trade him. And I've said time and time again, when you got more and more frustrated, you still don't know. And you still don't know. But what you're presented with as of today is the potential to make a trade that could land you a point guard who can score. And my guess is Butler's gone to Tibbs and said, I will take care of the defense. There's just too many things at play here. I mean, if Jimmy Butler hadn't left Chicago, the Wolves are not on this list and the Bulls are. There's too many things at play here that make sense for this to be a potential. And this is one of the few players who, if you come to me and said, would you give up on that potential ceiling to get this player? I'm saying yes.
You know what else you could do as we talk this through? Jeff T could be your backup point guard. It'd be a really expensive backup point guard, but you'd find a way to play him and Kyrie for like 8 minutes a game. And so Kyrie would play 35 and Teague would play 25, and then you'd play them together for like 10 minutes or something. And then you'd make it work that way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say he comes off the bench and you can sign, and I'd have to go look at a list of who's out there. Is there a more defensive minded? Is there a 3-and-D veteran wingman who could play the 2 or the 3 and, you know, he wouldn't have to be like a ball hog kind of a guy. Just be a guy like some version of a Bruce Bowen or someone who can play some defense and shoot some threes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know who that is, because I'd have to go take a look at who's still out there and who might sign for a veteran.
But what you're saying is there's ways to make it work.
651-646-8255-877-615-1500. Randy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's going on, man?
Hey, if I were Tom Thibodeau, I'd make this trade in a heartbeat. Last season, Phil, you went on one of the most epic rants on Andrew Wiggins of all time, as far as, you know, him wanting to conserve his energy and, hey, that's how you end up being Carmelo Anthony and Rudy Gay. And I understand, I watch a lot of Timberwolves. I'm not a Timberwolves fan, but I watch a lot of Timberwolves games just because I love Carl Anthony Towns so much. And I see when Andrew Wiggins plays, you know that there's more out there. The engagement, the drive, there's more that he can give. But he just seems like he doesn't really give a damn. And you guys have been wanting that for him from the last three seasons. Kyrie Irving gives you that drive that you're looking for, as far as that you've been looking for with Wiggins. He's not necessarily great defensively, but neither is Wiggins. But he gives you that drive. He's engaged the entire time. Also, Kyrie creates the perfect spacing for Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler, opposed to Wiggins, Butler, and Towns, because now you're talking about three guys that can score, and you're going to have to worry about the spacing of the floor in all case scenarios. And then also, regarding Karl Anthony Towns, because this is obviously your future, this is the main guy that you need to be concerned about, and we're talking about a league now where players can just jump ship and make it known they're not happy and go somewhere else, and it doesn't matter. Loyalty is just non-existent anymore in this league.
Mm-hmm.
You need to showcase the most upside of playing with Karl Anthony Towns to future free agents. And yes, you've got guys like Kyrie Irving that wants to play with you now, but just imagine with him there opposed to Andrew Wiggins and Butler playing with Karl Anthony Towns, there's much more potential. He'll make Karl Anthony Towns look way better opposed to Wiggins being there if you have Kyrie Irving. And you need to show Karl Anthony Towns, look, you can win here. This can be a real team, and look at the pieces we can put around you. So I'd make this trade in a heartbeat. I wouldn't want to hold my breath on Andrew Wiggins. I know he's still young, but I compare him to Harrison Barnes. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins is way better than Harrison Barnes. But the problem with Harrison Barnes, and the same thing you can say about Andrew Wiggins, is that they can make explosive plays out of nowhere. But for most of the games, you're sitting there wondering, like, where are you at, man? Come on, give me something. Kyrie gives you that. So if I was Tom Thibodeau, I'd make this trade in a heartbeat.
Realistic Randy in Oakland, thank you for the
points.
Phone call.
All good points, I think. And if you think that Tibbs can just tell Towns and Butler, you know, guys, I appreciate it, but you got, if you've got your two star players saying that, I understand that making every move based on what your star players want goes down a slippery slope. But in a situation like this, when you have your two best players actively coming to you and saying, make this trade, and they know exactly what the trade's going to be, it's too, in this day and age of basketball, I think you gotta say, okay, I'm at least going to pursue it, because if you want Towns and Butler ultimately to be happy, at times you're going to probably have to do things that are going to be difficult. But if they want that, you can't just dismiss them.
You know what? One of the cool things about this is, if they don't make the trade, they're still going to be really fun to watch, and they're going to be way better than the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
If they do make the trade, they're going to be way better than the last couple of years, and they're going to be super fun to watch. It's just kind of... The question is, you know, what's the right move to maximize the core that you have right now and the pieces for this year and 3 years from now and so forth? And so it's kind of a fun debate. We can take some more phone calls on this if you guys have thoughts. 651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Most recent poll results on our Twitter page at 1500 ESPN. Did I see that right? 54% say they wouldn't trade Wiggins for Kyrie.
That's correct.
So it's basically a coin flip.
Yes. Yes, it's very close. I'd do it.
Interesting. Let's come back, keep the discussion going here.
And this portion of Mackie and Judd is sponsored by Maurer Buick GMC.
Irving with four on the shot clock, works on McCaw. He'll unload a three and score. Irving hits the 40-point mark, and Steve Kerr takes a timeout. As with 2:16 to go in the fourth quarter, the Cavaliers have taken a 132-111 lead.
That could be the Wolves next year with Kyrie pulling up from 20 feet.
Look at you getting excited now.
Yeah, it's the feedback we're getting is so polarizing on this. Would you trade Andrew Wiggins for Kyrie Irving? Lubomir, a loyal listener, is very anti this trade. What happens when Irving realized Cat is the man and his bestie Butler might leave in 2 years anyways? Well, that's awfully negative. Irving doesn't improve you much more than Teague and strips you of a player basically as good. Wiggins, no, this is ridiculous. Well, I think, yeah, the Teague conundrum is, if this would have happened 2 months ago, then you would have crafted your offseason differently. If you were going to pull the trigger on a Wiggins for Kyrie trade like a month ago, mm-hmm. before the free agency window opened up, you do that, and then let's say you have $20 million still to spend in free agency. You would have spent it somewhere. You wouldn't have spent it on a point guard. No. You would have spent it on J.J. Redick or somebody like that. So then if you're asking, would I rather have Teague and Wiggins or Redick and Kyrie?
That's not hard.
No-brainer.
Yep.
But that's not the reality. You have Teague, and you have to keep him until at least December, because you can't sign a free agent and then trade him.
December 15th is the first day that they could trade him if they wanted to.
651-646-8255, 877-615-1500. Roderick, you're on with Mackie and Judd.
Hello, gentlemen.
What's up, Roderick?
Hey, Roderick.
Yeah, man.
I think this is a no-brainer. I think you make the trade if you have the opportunity. And the reason I say you make the trade is because this young team, specifically Cat, needs playoff experience. We are like the Chicago Bulls trying to overcome the Detroit Pistons, or the Detroit Pistons trying to overcome the Boston Celtics. We cannot worry about trying to beat Golden State next year. We first have to worry about getting to the playoffs. Excuse me. We have to first worry about getting to the playoffs, and everybody knows that in order to get playoff experience, you have to make it to the playoffs. Once we get there, then we need to learn how to win in the playoffs. Kyrie Irving brings that playoff experience. He brings veteran leadership along with Jimmy Butler. So just having Jimmy Butler by himself, it does give us some experience. It does give us some leadership, but it's a longer learning curve. When you have Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler, not only do you make it to the playoffs, but they help speed up the learning curve of how to win in the playoffs, how to compete. Next year is all about making it to the playoffs and hopefully getting past the first round. Next year is not about beating Golden State. We don't worry about that. We worry about that later. Once we make it to the playoffs, once we get Kat and the other young players experience that making it to the playoffs and becoming more seasoned, then we can worry about building the team for the future. Next year, we can have a great team. I remember, I think it was John Krasinski said like a month ago that the guy who went to J.J. Redick wanted to come to the Timberwolves, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And J.J. signed a one-year deal with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So we build right now. Next year, we can bring J.J. Redick on. So we have experience coming up this year. The year after this year, we bring in J.J. Redick, and we're constantly building for the future. That's why you make this trade now, because it speeds up the learning curve. It gives you more playoff experience, gives you more leadership, and it gives you more firepower.
Yeah, what so I would – and I would,
Wiggins is a great player, but you can always do better.
You can also – thank you, Roderick. You can also – you know, this is where I keep going both sides of the fence, and I'm sorry, but
quit vacillating.
You could get Andrew Wiggins back in a couple of years if you wanted. Like when Jimmy Butler emerges out of his prime, if you wanted, you could probably just replace him with Andrew Wiggins, who will be 26 or 27 years old if you pull this trade off and send him to Cleveland.
Well, if you make this trade, if you make this trade too, and now your core three are Butler, Kat, Kyrie, you instantly go from being, I think, a team on the rise who guys are intrigued by to being a team where guys say, I want to play there. So if you have those three, after this year, I think what you have is you have guys calling the Wolves, actively saying, I want to be part of that. So it's Kyrie just, he would take what you've done and accelerated, I think, by a step or two to the point where you would go from being a potentially desirable franchise to desirable.
Mm-hmm. Here's another question, and I'll read an email here, and it spawns another question from Dan via email. Is Kyrie Irving a much better version of Stephon Marbury? If he can't be happy playing next to LeBron James and he wants to be the man, mm-hmm. it's foolish to think he'll be happy here no matter who his teammates are. My question is, should Kyrie Irving, should he be faulted for wanting to leave a situation where, even though he's not the number one A guy, and I would argue he wouldn't be here either, that's Karl Anthony Towns and maybe even Jimmy Butler in the short term.
Sure.
Like, should he be ripped for passing up team success with one of the greatest players of all time for more of a selfish agenda, wanting to be the guy?
If the Cavaliers were a sound franchise, I would say the answer to the question is absolutely yes. They're not. They're incredibly dysfunctional. They're owned by a guy who from day to day waffles. I mean, they
and LeBron has one year left on his deal.
And LeBron has a year left. And this is a team that right before the draft basically fired their GM, allowed him to walk away. There's nobody truly in charge there now besides LeBron James. If you and the one thing I will say that would be as great as LeBron is on the court, the one thing that I think would get very trying if you're looking for stability is in some weird ways LeBron embraces the drama himself, which I think would get old and be disconcerting. If you truly believe that Kyrie Irving wants just to get away solely from LeBron James, to me, that's a problem. I don't. I'm not buying it. I think it's
complicated.
I think it might be part of it, but I also think Kyrie sees a situation there in Cleveland that's going right down the toilet bowl and it's going down quickly.
Stephon Marbury, if I recall, he wanted to bolt a situation where there was no question Garnett was going to be there for 10 years. In fact, KG had signed that big contract. It wasn't like KG had a year left and screw this. Unstable.
It was that contract that rubbed him the wrong way. And what Stephon said at the time, when Marbury left, his two big things were, Garnett's your star here. And we all said, okay, yeah, but you're 1B here, Steph. And then he said, I want to go back east.
So he fully, and Stephon Marbury is not the player that Kyrie Irving is. Kyrie Irving it's a different era. It's 20 years ago.
I was going to say, totally different.
But Kyrie Irving is a better player to this NBA than Stephon Marbury was to that NBA. And
yes.
Stephon might have been just a little younger. He was in the league for like 3 years. But Marbury passed up potential team success because his ego was inflated and he wanted more individual spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some of this for sure with Kyrie. I mean, hell, there was with Kobe when they were winning championships. But so for Kobe, it was partially, I want what's mine, and I want to run this team. But then it wound up working for him. He stayed in Los Angeles. They wound up trading Shaq, and it took a couple of years, but they built that team around Kobe. They won a couple more championships, and they were good for like 3 or 4 years, and then he blew out his Achilles, and then the, you know, then the story ended.
Sure.
Where I would hesitate is I'd want to know from Kyrie, are you leaving LeBron James because you want more individual spotlight, or are you leaving LeBron James because you know that he's not loyal to Cleveland and you just want to get out before it's a smoldering brush fire?
And he might also, Kyrie also might have a slightly difficult problem with the fact that if he doesn't like LeBron, see, he likes Butler a lot. They're buddies. But the league, the Steph thing is difficult because the league is so much different now. I mean, Steph, if you put Marbury back on the Wolves and had the same thing go down now,
you'd be like 42.
He's also going to say, what? I want to go to a team that's good and can win, and I want to play with two guys. I mean, at that time, he just pushed for a trade out east. They traded him to New Jersey. I mean, it was a lousy team. So, but if Kyrie has a problem with LeBron a little bit, but he also says to himself, this situation is awful, he's probably right on that. When LeBron James leaves Cleveland, what's left then?
Well, here's another thing, too, and we got to get to Hector Santiago and talk some Twins and stuff. But, you know, if you're right now, knowing that Cleveland really didn't add anything, and they might add Derrick Rose, but they haven't done anything.
And they have no GM.
They probably peaked emotionally and just everything about facing that team and putting everything into that season and then not really even coming close in those finals. I mean, there was a couple close games, but they weren't really close to beating Golden State. It feels like they're coming down the other side of the mountain. And the way that LeBron has been disengaged this offseason, It feels like he's going to coast through knowing they're not going to win a championship in his last year in Cleveland and then go somewhere else. And if you're young, hungry Kyrie Irving, you're reading all these tea leaves.
Yeah.
So it's different than the Stephon Marbury situation. Because Steph was fully selfish. I need to be coddled more, and I need to be in the spotlight.
I want more money.
There's
yes.
a little bit of that for sure with Kyrie here, and you'd have to understand he's not. This is not. You're not like getting the full red carpet here.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of a team and part of a trio of superstars. But let's get back into this later. This is super fascinating.
You're going to do
stuff,
it man. By the end of the show. You are going to make this trade.
Can I make the full flip flop? By
you
the
are
end of
going
the trade?
To you. All right, 12:55. You're going to make the trade. I can feel it.
Hold me to it at the end. Ask me again at the very end of the show, and
all
I'll
right.
tell you.
All okay.
Right. Let's talk some Twins here. Trade deadline coming up. Twins with a big 3-game series against the best team in the National League, the Dodgers. Hector Santiago on the DL, but he's got baseball insights, and he joins us every Monday, and we'll talk to him when we come back.
It's time for baseball.
It's time for Talking Twins.
Talking.
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 Twins.
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 Talking Twins. Now hanging out to talk some hardball with Mackie and John. Here's Twins pitcher Hector Santiago.
Swing and a miss, and Hector Santiago fans the first two.
Watch out, all right, Twins. They did lose 2-3 at home against the Tigers. They actually fell to third place in the American League Central. Still a game above 500. Just 2.5 back of the Cleveland Indians in the division. And Hector Santiago, who's been great with us every Monday. If you got a week to go here until the trade deadline, how would you sort of, now that you've seen half the season and you've been able to get a gauge on a lot of the other contenders, how would you size this thing up, Twins compared to other teams in the American League, as everything is kind of scrunched together right now, Hector?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously we're competing, we're in the division, and we're only 2 games back, like they just said. You know, I think in any team that's competing and battling for a playoff spot, there's always a necessity. There's always one thing that could always make you better, could always help you out. And, you know, right now it's that one inning gap to the bullpen, you know, maybe a sixth or seventh inning kind of thing that gets the ball to Raj and Kins. But, I think right now, you know, we're capable of doing a lot of good things. We've got to keep playing good baseball, and we got to, you know, put together a streak where we get a run of wins together. I think that's the only thing that we've been missing this year, that long run of, you know, a 6-game winning streak or a 7-game winning streak.
Yeah, there hasn't been like that 7-game losing streak on either side. It's just kind of been 2-3, 1-3. So what would the reaction? How would the clubhouse react either way? If the front office, they almost traded for Garcia last week, but
if the front office were to make a move to buy and to help versus if they were to stand pat and do nothing, what would the difference in reaction be for the clubhouse?
You know, I think honestly with the way the season's been going, we've had so many guys up here. It's been up and down. There's been so many new arms and so many new faces coming in and out. I don't even think anybody would even notice what, you know, obviously it'd be a new face in the clubhouse and it'd be the news would be all over about it. But I just think it wouldn't make a difference. It wouldn't make an impact on if they're going to be, if the players are going to be mad at the front office. I think, you know, anything's going to help and we're all very accepting. I think that's the baseball lifestyle. You understand that somebody's coming in, somebody's going out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've gotten to that point and everybody in their career has understood that, you know, to get better, sometimes you got to add a piece and you got to see one of your good buddies go down or, you know, move out somewhere. And I think it's just the understanding of baseball that that's part of the game. And we've gotten used to it. We live with it. We've been part of it, you know, coming up to the big leagues and going back down to the minors. Everybody's lived it. And it's just something that you just kind of take in stride and just keep looking forward.
That being said, though, what's the stress like right now? Because, I mean, we've gone through, what, at least a solid month, if not more, of names being bandied about on Twitter and in reports. What does the stress get to be like now where we're a week out and you're at least thinking that something very well might take place before the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of see how it's going. I think in the clubhouse, there's not too much stress about it. We're just trying to go out there and just win some ball games. We just want to go out there, have fun, and, you know, at the end of the night, have a W. Maybe for the front office, they're probably doing a lot more, you know, stressing and stuff going on up there because they're trying to consider, are we contending?
Right.
Are we going to be buyers? Are we going to be sellers? Like, you know, they have a few guys that other teams would probably like, but then we're in a good position where if we, like I said, if we win six or seven games, this could be we can be in first place at, you know, the end of July here and then August going into the, September. I mean, you know, we have a really good chance of this thing kind of running and going our way. And I think the pressure is on the front office of what they're going to do and what they're thinking.
Sure.
For us as players, we just want to go out there and compete and do our job.
Do you guys ignore this then? I mean, do you go on Twitter and things like that? Or do you guys try and stay as far away from the speculation and reports that come out as possible?
Yeah, I think we all avoid it. I think we all understand that it's going to be there. Like, you know, we pretty much had a deal done. They were tweeting all about it for the lefty from Atlanta, and you know, it fell through, and you know, they were saying it was pretty much a done deal, and then next minute it's not happening. So you know, I think that's the reason why you kind of avoid it. You hear stuff, you hear your name, you see all kinds of things, you don't know what's real, what's legit. So you just stay out of it. You know, you go, and everybody's gonna be on Twitter, everybody's gonna be on social media. It's just a matter of, you know, blocking it out, keep scrolling, and, you know, get ready for that next game.
Yeah. Hey, Hector, there's a big story in Boston today where David Price and some Red Sox confronted Dennis Eckersley on the team plane because Eckersley's been critical on the broadcast and things like that. How much do, and I guess you kind of answered it in a little bit there, how much do you or other players care about former players criticizing, whether it's broadcasts, how much awareness is there of, oh man, like so-and-so Burp Lilevin might have said this or whatever previous teams you've played for?
Yeah, there's been a few situations in my career where, you know, a former player or somebody's up there and, you know, and the worst thing about that is that they've been through it. They understand the grind, the struggle. Sometimes you're going to go on good streaks and some days you're going to go on bad streaks. And honestly, when we were there in Boston, some of the guys in our clubhouse couldn't believe what he was saying. You know, they were just like, wow, this guy has no filter. He's just straight up, here you go, here it is. And I think, you know, you have to understand that you got to protect your team. So you got to say, no matter how bad it's going, you got to be positive on your team's side and kind of hold back and kind of hold your tongue a little bit to certain points. And I've been a part of some of those situations where, it's whether it's a broadcaster or a reporter getting confronted about that in the clubhouse. And I mean, for me, I try to ignore everything, man. I really try to just block out everything. And I know there's going to be negative and I've understood it. I've been a part of it where, you know, been talked down and just, you know, I try to forget about it, but there's always a point when they're a player just can't take it anymore and they have to say something out of respect for their team or just trying to maybe get the guy to be like, hey man, like,
this is 162 games. This is 180 days of just grinding, and you know, not every night is going to be perfect. And you know, that guy, he should definitely understand. He's been in game. He's been in a lot of big situations, and he should understand that it's not every day is not going to be perfect.
I another question I have is, how much do players in today's game respect or recognize players that maybe played in generations before? I actually heard a story, and the player for the Indians shall go nameless. There's no need to like air this out publicly, but a prominent player for the Indians sometime in the past 3 years, Paul Molitor was either pregame or Paul Molitor was out there, you know, hearing distance. And this player asked Paul innocently, "Oh, did you play? Were you a player in your career?" And Paul Molitor is one of the greatest hitters of all time, and the prominent player for the Indians had no idea. Is that common? Like, do players in 2017 care about the history of the game?
You know, I've been a part of that. I've been in some conversations in the clubhouse, and like somebody's like, "No, who's that?" And it's like, it's so hard. You know, there's been so many people coming in and out, but like somebody like Paul. You kind of have to know, you know, what he's done and what he's done in his career. And it's just, there's a part of the game where there's some lost history there because of all the other big names. You miss some of the guys. And I've been a part of some conversations where I say a name and somebody's like, who? And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I'll Google it and kind of show them and maybe, you know, kind of add it a little. But I mean, definitely for some of the young guys, you know, like, So I was talking about Doc Gooden the other day, and somebody was like, "Who the what?" And I'm like, "Oh, all right, here you go." Like, and then this, and I show the kind of stuff. But I mean, I think, you know, for the younger side of the game, it is, because I mean, Doc Gooden played how many years ago, and you know, maybe there's not that much talk about him anymore. And
right.
You know, you always hear certain big names, but you don't hear everybody who always played the game in the past. So you kind of have to go and read into it if you want to learn the history of it.
So does it bug you more if you get potentially ripped by a broadcaster who played the game, or does it bug you more if the criticism comes from someone who didn't play the game?
That's a tough one, because that's another topic that comes up a lot. And it's like, for the guys who haven't played the game, they're like, "Well, you didn't play that game, so you have no idea." And then the guys that have played the game, is like, they should understand. But I think it's a little bit tougher from the guys that haven't played the game, who don't understand that. You know, some days you're aching and you're out there grinding, you're pitching through some stuff. And, you know, I think those are tough ones, because then I think those are the guys that get more confronted too. Like, "Hey, man, like, you know, I've been grinding. I've been going through some stuff. Like, let's be a little, hold back on, you know, all the trash talk or kind of throwing at me. Let me, you know, be respectful of your team. If you're working for the Twins, you kind of be respectful of the Twins, players."
Yeah. Good stuff, man. We appreciate the insight.
Hey, no problem.
All right, Hector. Thanks, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Actually, next Monday, I believe, is what's today, the 24th. So next Monday is the trade deadline
yes.
day.
Yep, we're back to July 31st.
Yeah, we're going to pump out a bunch of Touch 'Em All podcast stuff this week, and Derek's going to join us in less than an hour. He's got a list of names the Twins could target if they're looking for starting pitching help below that Sonny Gray level, if they're not going to go all in for a Sonny Gray type guy. So he's awesome. He's super candid.
Well, but it's got to, you know, I get both sides, but it's just like Eckersley's a fantastic pitcher. And all he did in the reason David Price was mad was essentially because they showed the stats of a pitcher who I think was coming back from a rehab start in Pawtucket, and the stats were awful. Yeah. And Eck just said, "Yuck." Now, but it's weird because Phil. This goes way, way back. I remember when I was a kid on this station, the North Stars were on the station, and the analyst at the time had said something critical that like a wife or girlfriend heard. For the three-star show, the team boycotted it. They wouldn't go on. The top star
like
said
the,
no.
Just the players.
The player said yeah, and so they finally put a defenseman on, and he was a classy guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, this goes way back towards I heard you said this or that, and it's so thin skinned at times.
The rule of thumb should be this, and this is David Price can go bleep himself. David Price is 31 or 32 years old. He's been in the league for 10 years, and hasn't gotten anyone out as a starting pitcher in the playoffs. He's one of the worst playoff pitchers among big star pitchers. He's the opposite of Madison Bumgarner, who just goes and shoves every time he's on the mound in a playoff game.
Yep.
And so if you're David Price, there are things to criticize. Be self-aware. Now, I don't watch all of the broadcasts. I don't know exactly what Dennis Eckersley says, but Dennis Eckersley, to accuse Dennis Eckersley of not knowing how hard the game is.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
When Dennis Eckersley gave up one of the most heartbreaking, prominent home runs in the history of baseball
and was a
to
starter
Kirk Gibson.
And closer.
Yes.
I mean, he's played done every angle of that.
It's ridiculous. But I heard that story about Paul Molitor when we talk about history of the game and understand who's criticizing you. And it was a player, a total household name with the Indians, position player. I think Molitor was like maybe coaching first at some point. This is sometime in the it might have been when he was an assistant with Guardy a few years ago.
Okay.
And the player just making small talk, you know, over at some point before the game, and
Molitor said
kind of like, do you play much?
you play the game?
Like, I don't know. I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just
3,000 hits.
One of the smartest players to ever play the game. But besides that, you know, I didn't do much.
Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
Alrighty then.
On 1500 ESPN.
We've got Matthew Collar from training camp in about 25 minutes or so. Derek Wetmore with Twins trade possibilities in the noon. So in fairness, just back to our conversation with Hector Santiago, I told that anecdote about an Indians player in the last few years not knowing who Paul Molitor was. So did you play? Yeah.
Were you any good, though?
The players, and you got this whole thing between Dennis Eckersley and the Red Sox, and Red Sox players like David Price wondering if he understands how hard the game is. Yes, there are very few pitchers in baseball who understand, as a closer and a starter, how hard baseball is. Being on a highlight reel that gets shown over and over and over of you giving up a bomb in the 88 World Series.
And you were
to
really
Kirk
good,
Gibson.
Too.
Yes,
though.
Yes.
You were really good.
So, in fairness, I think in baseball you have so many players, especially now, coming over from Venezuela and the Dominican Republic and just other places that aren't in the continental United States, even Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of players coming over from Puerto Rico. Well, if you grew up specifically in Venezuela or the Dominican Republic, you probably didn't grow up with American baseball history running through your veins, right? If you were even born in the 90s, in mid-90s, if someone were to ask you, you know, who's Mike Schmidt? Well, you grew up watching Mike Schmidt. I grew up, my dad was a big baseball fan.
Exactly,
so like, I watched
was.
The 500 home run videos. Right. I knew who Mike Schmidt was,
right,
even though I never saw him play. And I could tell you his stats and his, you know, whatever, 267 batting average, all these things. But if you grew up in a different country, Venezuela, mm-hmm, you might know who the Venezuelan players are. Or it's like the EPL. The EPL, the English Premier League, is probably the most prestigious and noteworthy professional sports league in the world. Is it fair to say that? The EPL is the best soccer is the
point.
Most popular sport.
Yeah.
EPL is the most popular and best league. And I would be able to tell you some of the American players that play, but I wouldn't be able to sit here outside of the top players like David Beckham,
mm-hmm,
I wouldn't be able to tell you the history of players in the 70s and 80s because I wasn't immersed in that culture.
Right.
So in fairness to some of those players.
Hector did say something, though, that I find to be interesting in that it's the difference between how the two of us think about things and how the team and players do. Hector essentially said, if you are associated with or work for the Twins, you should be on our side. Which is to say, this is why Fox Sports North is loath to get on there and say, we're going to break down why so-and-so sucks tonight.
Yeah, I have a feeling if you let Jack Morris say what he really wanted to say about pitchers, he would, and little things come out once in a while. And Bert, I remember when Bert got on Kevin Slowey like 8 or 9 years ago. And that was like, whoa.
I sense there have been times in the past 15 years where the Twins actively tell a broadcaster, it's okay. Go ahead and say it. I really do.
Yeah.
There have been times where, because it's just the turn can be so jarring, it doesn't seem like Bert would all of a sudden decide, you know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to go after the starting pitcher. That being said, though, Santiago is telling the complete truth in that players and the team officials, they really see this as you're on our side or not. And we're not. And they don't really care. But when he says, because the thing with Eck is the Red Sox players, I think, say, you played the game, you should side with us, and for you to say what you think is a violation of our trust, which to me is garbage. I mean, get up there every night and tell me exactly why a guy is struggling or why things aren't going right. But the player's mentality is very much, you played the game, you should understand how tough the game is, and therefore you should not be ragging on us, despite the fact that it's far more compelling television when they do.
I feel like the rule of thumb should be, as long as you're not taking personal shots at somebody, if you're just calling out a performance for what it is, it's the old, you know, Lavelle has told the story before. When Jock Jones was in, this is like 15 years ago, and Jock Jones was 2 for 25 off lefties or something. And Lavelle wrote it, just a little news and note item in the Star Tribune, and Jock was complaining, and Torrey Hunter was sort of the, I guess, like the guy listening to Jock Jones, and Torrey goes, well, what are you mad about? Well, he said I'm 2 for 25 off lefties. And Torrey's like, are you 2 for 25 off lefties? It's like, yeah. Well, yeah, but okay, well, then go hit a lefty.
But he shouldn't point that out.
If right, that's
because he's
thing.
My
if,
buddy.
Now, if guy on TV or columnist, and this happens too, mm-hmm. were to go on and say something more personal or dig a little deeper,
well, sure.
and something that goes beyond just a performance level criticism,
yeah,
okay, well then maybe that's unfair, especially if you work for the team. But if you're just pointing out the obvious in a 103 loss season or something, or with the Red Sox, if you're pointing out the obvious about a player like David Price.
Right.
Who can't get anyone out in the postseason.
But didn't the Cubs get all mad at Chip Carey and Steve Stone
they
about that?
They ran those guys
they
out
ran
town.
Them out because Dusty yep. Baker didn't like the fact that it got back to Dusty Baker, that they basically were being frank in their assessment. I mean, they didn't like the fact. So it's this whole thing of you're either, if you travel with us and you played the game, you're either on our side or not. It's silly, but they believe it.
Yeah, they ran those guys out of town. Now, Moise Salou peed on his hands and opened himself up for criticism more. So he might want to look in the mirror.
Toughened his hands up. Come on.
Dave, you got some questions for us when we come back here?
We might have to break down a Green Bay Packers issue, considering it is shareholders meeting day.
God. Yes!
Little Kyrie. Yeah, we'll make it happen here.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
Thank you for all your cooperation.
On 1500 ESPN.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans.